In 1957, an inventor appeared as a contestant on the TV game show I've Got a Secret. The host was Gary Moore.
Now, we're not going to identify this contestant panel because to identify him would be to tip off his secret. We will call him simply Dr. X.
A celebrity panel tried to figure out the identity of the mystery guest.
And we go to Jane Meadows, please.
Could I assume that what you are working on could be considered a blessing to mankind?
I think, generally speaking, it has been a blessing, yes.
Even after the panel learned the name of the guest, they still seemed to have no idea who he was.
This is the famous Dr. Philo T. Farnsworth, who invented electronic television.
Farnsworth received $80 and a carton of Winston's for stumping the panel, but his anonymity was anything but rewarding. Farnsworth invented the televisions we use today, but he became a forgotten figure in history due in large part to David Sarnoff, the president of RCA. Sarnoff appropriated the technology Farnsworth developed and claimed much of the credit for inventing television. Evan Schwartz writes about the birth of television in a new book titled The Last Lone Inventor. He says Farnsworth first figured out how to transmit pictures electronically in 1922 when he was 14 years old, living on a farm in Idaho.
He was out tilling the potato field one day, and it struck him when he saw the parallel furrows in the field that the only way to create television was to scan images line by line with electrons, transmit them, paint them on a screen, and there you would have television.
And he got some backing.
That's right. He met some local philanthropists and got these two guys to believe in his passion for the invention of television, even though they didn't understand what it was.
But word spread about what he was doing.
That's right. He demonstrated for the press in 1928, and the San Francisco Chronicle was the first newspaper to pick it up, and then word spread across the country.
Mr. Philo T. Farnsworth, shown at the right, is working on the image dissector tube, a photoelectric camera tube of his own invention that distinguishes his system of television from others. It is said to be responsible for the most clearly defined television pictures.
Meanwhile, the head of RCA, David Sarnoff, was still making radio deals, still monopolizing radio.
That's right. When he heard about Philo T. Farnsworth, Sarnoff came across the country to offer $100,000 for the entire company and the patent portfolio.
And being unable to buy him off,
he devised this plan to steal credit for the idea.
1931, you're offered $100,000. In 1931, the Depression is on.
That's a lot of money, and it's a lot of money to turn down. But the investors had put in that much money, and they viewed it as an insulting offer. And that is really what set up the battle between Farnsworth and Sarnoff.
Farnsworth made a deal with Philco.
That's right. Philco was the biggest maker of radios in that day, and they wanted to get into television. And when RCA found out that Farnsworth was there working with Philco, there was an implied or maybe explicit threat that if you don't stop this project, we're going to withdraw our patent licenses. It would have put Philco out of business.
RCA put the muscle on Philco.
That's right. And this is really in parallel to what can happen in almost any industry where there's a monopoly. The Justice Department was investigating RCA for years, and those were the kind of tactics that RCA used back then.
In 1939, Sarnoff demonstrated television at the World's Fair in New York.
This was one of the most dramatic moments, I thought, in the story, because Sarnoff knew instinctively that he had to debut television at the fair. It was this sprawling event, and Sarnoff introduced television, said, we are adding sight to sound, and the press reported it far and wide. From then on, Sarnoff got the credit for bringing television to the public.
Well, Farnsworth didn't get nothing. He got $1 million out of Sarnoff.
Sarnoff realized he was open to a patent infringement suit, so they eventually settled, and RCA acquired a non-exclusive license to be able to produce televisions under these patents.
Farnsworth didn't want to sue him for any more because he still wanted to deal with RCA.
He was optimistic that he could bring television to the public just the same. He was starting his own company, beginning to manufacture. And he didn't quite realize that the age of the lone inventor was coming to an end. And when one of his heroes died in the early 30s, Thomas Edison, the New York Times said, Edison is probably the last of the great lone inventors. The future probably belongs to the corporate research laboratory and captains of industry that marshal hundreds or thousands of scientists. And that's exactly what happened, but Farnsworth didn't realize he was fighting this force of corporate-controlled innovation.
Next came the war, which delayed development of television. 1947, the war is over, television becomes more widely available, and that was the year Farnsworth's patents expired.
1947, it was just ironic that his patents expired just a few weeks before television suddenly explodes, and all those revenue opportunities were gone.
Philo Farnsworth and David Sarnoff both died in 1971.
Farnsworth died at a young age, 64. Sarnoff died a few months later, and everyone remembered Sarnoff, and there were all kinds of tributes. And the contrast really couldn't have been greater. At that point, no one knew who Philo T. Farnsworth was. And there is a certain moment of redemption when you begin to tell the story, though.
Yeah, but it's long after you're dead and they make the movie.
Right. Well, I mean, Farnsworth never got to see the recognition, and he was upset about how technology turned out, the technology of television. His last redeeming moment was when men walked on the moon, and he said, this has really been worth it, just being able to watch that on live television.
Evan Schwartz. His new book is titled The Last Lone Inventor, A Tale of Genius, Deceit, and the Birth of Television.